says Israel's systematic massacres of Gazans amount to war crimes, holding the regime responsible for the mass burial of at Gaza's Nasser Hospital. The Hezbollah resistance movement shoots down an Israeli Hermes 450 drone over southern Lebanon after it violated the country's airspace. And two major American military bases in eastern Syria come under missile and drone attacks amid simmering anti-US sentiments across the region. Thank you for joining us. Palestinians continue to endure a US-Israeli genocidal war on the besieged Gaza Strip, the scene of death and destruction on a daily basis. In the latest attack, Israeli warplanes targeted two residential buildings in Rafah City, killing 19 Palestinians, including 14 children. The Ministry of Health in Gaza reports that some 48 Palestinians were killed and 79 others were injured in Gaza in the past 24 hours. That brings up the total number of victims since October the 7th to more than 34,000. The number of those wounded has also risen to almost 77,000. On Saturday, the Palestinian Civil Defense said bodies of over 200 Palestinians buried by Israel in a mass grave were recovered inside Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. From Deir al-Balah in central Gaza, from Moti Abu Musabeh joined us earlier for more on the mass graves uncovered in the Nasser Hospital.
More heinous crimes are unfolding every moment here in the Gaza Strip, particularly in Khan Yunis city, whereas at least three mass graves were discovered over the last couple of hours in less than 24 hours inside the yards of the Nasser medical complex, including at least 210 Palestinian dead bodies. Those dead bodies were kidnapped and abducted inside the Nasser medical complex, and they were executed in cold blood by the Israeli occupation forces during their ground offensive against the Nasser medical complex over the last couple of months. According to Gaza civil defense crews, that at least 500 Palestinian civilians are estimated to be missed and buried in the same and still trapped under the rubble of those destroyed houses and the rubble of the facilities in Khan Yunis city. So we are facing more atrocities committed against the Palestinian people, and these atrocities actually present another substantial evidence on the brutality and the cruelty of the Israeli occupation forces when it comes to the Palestinian people. The vast majority of those dead bodies actually were extracted, and they were found actually blindfolded and handcuffed, which means that they were executed in cold blood by the Israeli occupation forces after being kidnapped and abducted. As I've mentioned, that according to Gaza civil defense crews, that at least 2,000 Palestinian civilians are estimated forcibly disappeared till this moment over the repetitive attacks against multiple areas in the Gaza Strip.
Iran holds Israel responsible for the massacre and mass burial inside Gaza's Nasser Hospital, saying the states supporting the regime are also accountable for the crime. The foreign ministry spokesman urged the UN chief, the rotating president of the Security Council, and the entire international community to condemn the horrific incident in Khan Yunis. Nasser Kanani also called for tapping into national, regional, and international potential to prosecute the culprits behind the crime perpetrated at the hospital. Kanani underlined that Israel's systematic and extensive massacres of Gazans clearly amount to genocide and war crimes. The recovery of over 200 bodies from a mass grave inside the Nasser medical complex has also drawn condemnation from Hamas. The resistance movement says the discovery of the mass grave proves the extent of the Israeli crimes and atrocities being committed against Palestinians. Hamas says the horrific crimes would have been impossible without Washington's backing for Israel. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian says the Israeli regime and its acts of aggression are the root causes of insecurity in the region. Amir Abdollahian made the comment during a phone conversation with his Finnish counterpart Elina Valtonen on Sunday. He said the Islamic Republic is not seeking tension in West Asia, adding that regional peace requires a right stance and an end to the West double standards. The top Iranian diplomat also called for collective efforts to help end the genocidal war on Gaza, urging European governments to stop arming Israel. The Finnish foreign minister said on her part that the continuation of tensions in the region is not in the interest of anyone, adding that her country condemns any move that escalates the situation. She also said that Finland wants an immediate ceasefire in Gaza without preconditions. Palestinians have joined a general strike across the occupied West Bank in condemnation of the massacre carried out by Israeli forces in the Nur Shams refugee camp. Our correspondent Mona Kandil reports from Ramallah.
After almost 3 days, the Israeli forces withdrew from the refugee camp of Nur Shams near the city of Tul Karim in northern occupied West Bank. Only then paramedics were able to evacuate the martyrs' bodies and the families were able to count their dead. Over a dozen Palestinians have been killed since Thursday, but the number might be higher, as reports suggest that Israeli forces had confiscated the bodies of more martyrs. On Sunday, a comprehensive general strike was declared across the occupied West Bank to mourn Tul Karim martyrs. Scores of Palestinians also held a protest in the center of Ramallah against Israel's escalation and violence in Tul Karim and Nur Shams refugee camp.
Israel is expanding its genocide into the West Bank as well. And as we said before, there is no safe place for any Palestinian. And there has to be immediate Palestinian unity to stand up to this terrible aggression. And there has to be international boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign worldwide. And there has to be condemnation.
It's obvious that the Palestinian people, leadership and factions have to declare an immediate comprehensive popular uprising all over the Palestinian territories until the Israeli occupation ends. The ongoing war of attrition is no longer useful, but what's necessary is a national popular uprising.
The Israeli invasion has caused some of the worst destruction in the West Bank in decades. The occupation forces destroyed infrastructure, including sewage lines, shops, homes, and vehicles. Homes were turned into interrogation centers, and dozens of Palestinians were arrested. According to locals, heavy exchange of fire and clashes took place between resistance fighters and Israeli soldiers during the operation. The Israeli military admitted that at least 9 of its soldiers were wounded.
The Israeli occupation regime is escalating its violence against the Palestinian people. Its crimes are meant to exterminate the Palestinian people. In Gaza, genocide is being committed, and here in the West Bank, there are daily incursions, murders, collective punishment, and destruction everywhere. The Israeli occupation is doing its utmost to either bring Palestinians to their knees or commit more aggression and crimes against them.
Sunday's general strike paralyzed all aspects of life in the West Bank, with shops, schools, universities, and banks shuttered. But Palestinians question whether such a standstill is enough, expressing fear that once the Israeli military is done with Gaza, the occupied West Bank could be next. The Israeli military's violence against Palestinians is aimed at countering resistance, people here say. This is part of the Israeli crackdown on armed groups in the occupied West Bank. However, Palestinians say the Israeli crimes, including in the Nur Shams refugee camp, have failed to weaken their determination. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says it has shot down an Israeli drone over an area in southern part of the country. Hezbollah said the targeted drone is Hermes 450, adding that the operation was carried out in support of Palestinians in Gaza. The group has downed and intercepted several Israeli drones in recent months. The Lebanese resistance movement and the Israeli military have been trading fire since October the 8th, a day after the regime launched its genocidal war on Gaza. Hezbollah fires missiles and rockets at Israeli military sites in northern occupied territories, while Israel targets residential areas in southern Lebanon. Meanwhile, two U.S. military bases in Syria have come under fresh missile and drone attacks amid growing anti-American sentiment in the region. Lebanese media reports say 4 missiles hit the Al-Omar oil field base, while 3 missiles and a drone targeted the Kharab al-Jir base. Both facilities are located in the northeastern Syrian province of Hasaka. No group has yet claimed responsibility, but Reuters, citing security sources, said five rockets were fired from the Iraqi town of Zumar towards northeastern Syria without giving further detail. U.S. military facilities and bases in Syria have come under repeated attacks in recent months. Resistance groups in Iraq and elsewhere are outraged at the U.S. military presence in the region, which they say is a source of instability, as well as Washington's support for the Israeli regime in its ongoing genocidal war on Gaza. People in different parts of the world continue to turn out in large numbers to protest against the ongoing Israeli genocidal war on Gaza. In the Canadian city of Toronto, people have once again hit the streets to demand their government end its support for the Israeli regime. Earlier, our correspondent Camila Escalante, who was present at the rally, joined us with the details.
Well, I'm in downtown Toronto, and once again, like every weekend, hundreds of people, if not thousands, are coming out here today to protest against the genocidal Zionist regime holding of hostages, of prisoners, for, of course, you know, many decades. That's the theme of this weekend's march. There are people here who have gathered alongside different organizations affiliated actually with their neighborhoods, because within the last 6 months, these organizations have kind of spurred up and began organizing locally against the genocide and in order to approach their ministers of parliament and to try to tell them that it's simply not acceptable that they not call for a ceasefire. And now the demand has become a total two-way comprehensive arms embargo between Canada and Israel. They said some of the things that the Canadian government has done thus far have been only symbolic. A lot of expressions from the Canadian government of concerns with what's going on with Gaza, but not anything substantive in terms of actually trying to end the genocide in Gaza and Canada's complicity. It's also really important to say, one thing that we've been reporting for several months is that there is a significant amount of material that has been gathered by the International Center for Justice for Palestinians, a group of lawyers, academics, and experts, about the possibility of a case against Canada at the ICJ, in the same way that Nicaragua has taken Germany, the German government, to the International Court of Justice. Lawyers here in Canada say that they also want to take the Canadian state to the ICJ for its crimes, saying they have even more of a case than the case that exists against Germany.
A European NGO has called for investigations into the role of major technology companies and international social media platforms in the ongoing genocide in Gaza. The Euromed Human Rights Monitor said those companies must be held accountable if they're found to be complicit in the crime. According to the Euromed, those firms will also be needed to hold into account in case of their failure to prevent access to users' information and its exploitation. The Geneva-based group pointed to frequent reports that Israel uses a number of artificial intelligence-supported technological systems to illegally track and monitor Palestinians. The NGO said it has been recently revealed that the U.S. tech giant Google and Israel are collaborating on several technology initiatives. The Euromed's call comes as UN experts warned earlier this month that Israel's use of AI in Gaza is leading to an unprecedented toll on civilian population and infrastructure. And last but not least, to end the bulletin, earlier in our news review program, we discussed the significance of Iran's retaliatory operation against Israel, hailed by the leader of the Islamic Revolution.
It's news review time. Stay tuned. The leader of the Islamic Revolution says Iran's retaliatory operation against Israel demonstrated its resolve internationally. Ayatollah Khamenei said that the establishment of this willpower is what has angered the enemy. The leader made the comments while meeting with Iran's top military commanders. He hailed the armed forces for giving a good impression of their capacities and power and a commendable image of the Iranian nation. Ayatollah Khamenei was referring to the massive missile and drone strikes against Israel after regime's deadly attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus. Now I'm inviting two guests to discuss this a bit more. Hakima Safavi-Biru is an academic and political analyst in Tehran. Farouk Sekalashvar, Islamic scholar, joining me from Rome. Good to have you both. Beginning with Hakima, tell us your assessment of all this media propaganda, especially in the West, trying to undermine this, you know, showing some images that Iran has hit just some, has caused some minor damage here and there, and whereas Iran had already said that this is only a warning, it was not meant for destruction. That's what Iran has actually done.
Iran was not aiming at destroying Israel on that night, but that to show its determination and its resolve to take action whenever needed. And at this time, the idea was to hit, you know, the place that was, you know, used for committing the, you know, the act of terror against the Iranian consulate. So, and that actually was done. So I think it is important to understand that what we are witnessing today is seeing Iran's capabilities, you know, on the ground. We are seeing Iran's resolve to take action whenever needed and at the right time with the right amount of power. And I think the people of the world, and especially those who are concerned about the plight of the Palestinians, those who are concerned about the continuation of the genocide that's happening in Palestine, the continuation of Israeli atrocities all around the region, basically against different targets, including Iranian targets, are happy with what they have seen.
Okay. Now let me move to city of Qom, Farouk. Iran had already given warnings, and that on multiple occasions, not once and once and twice. And there were some who were saying that Iran is only talking about this, it will never take action, but Iran did take action, as it had a warning, it had warned already. So let our viewers know what message this action conveys to both the adversaries and ill-wishers of the Islamic establishment.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The first point was that the power of deterrence that the Israeli regime supposed to have had proved out to be a spider web deterrence. And this in itself was their greatest defeat. And the whole world saw this. Before this, such a deterrence was keeping them at least mentally ahead, and it was looming over the Muslim masses. But alhamdulillah, Iran, the most important thing with Allah's permission that they did was to not only show their capabilities, but in addition to that, ruin and put an end to the deterrence that they had and show to the world that this was nothing. It was all imagination and they have nothing. And for the Muslim masses, there's nothing to fear. This was the greatest defeat.
Thank you, my guests, Hakima Safavi-Biru in Tehran and Farouk Sekalashvar in the city of Qom.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
In Britain, ministers are facing a revolt from their own Conservative MPs over plans to criminalise homelessness in the upcoming legislation. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Sky News has covered this story and tells us more. Rough sleeping could be fully decriminalised after 200 years on the proposals from rebel Conservative MPs to repeal legislation dating from the aftermath of the Napoleonic Wars. A group of Tory MPs working with UK's Labour and Liberal Democrat MPs want to strip out proposed and existing legislation that criminalises homelessness. The revolt is focused on government plans to introduce harsher policing of rough sleepers in its crime bill. Under proposals announced by the former UK Home Secretary Suella Braverman, police in England and Wales are to be given powers to fine or move on rough sleepers deemed to be causing a nuisance for the public. The move has infuriated MPs across the Conservative Party. Several dozen MPs are supporting proposals by Bob Blackman, the Tory MP coordinating the rebellion, to remove parts of the bill that criminalise rough sleeping and repeal the 200-year-old Vagrancy Act. The combined effect of these proposals, if passed, would be to fully decriminalise rough sleeping. The government has committed to repealing the Vagrancy Act of 1824, which was introduced to target wounded soldiers who began begging on the streets of England after returning from the Napoleonic Wars as homeless and destitute. However, ministers have yet to announce a date for the Act to be repealed, and campaigners say that in its current form, the Criminal Justice Bill would go even further. According to the data collected by the local government expert Jack Shaw, almost 4,000 people have been arrested under the vagrancy laws in the 5 years to 2023. Conservative MP Bob Blackman said aspects of the proposed bill, under which rough sleepers could be moved on, fined up to £2,500 or imprisoned, were outrageous and worse than the Vagrancy Act. He added the police should assist people who are homeless to find somewhere that they can stay safely rather than arrest them and put them in a prison cell. Bob Blackman added, what we've got to make sure of is that we consign the Vagrancy Act to the history book, not the statute book, and ensure that people are assisted to find somewhere to live. Nicky Aiken, the Tory MP for Cities of London and Westminster and a long-standing campaigner against the Vagrancy Act, said, I've been working with Bob Blackman on the amendment and it's ridiculous to think that we should criminalise rough sleepers today. How are they going to pay their £2,500 fine? They need proper services addressing the reasons why they're on the street, not a criminal record. Matt Downey, the chief executive of homelessness charity Crisis, said, if these amendments pass, and they appear to have cross-party support from huge numbers of people in the Parliament, they would have the effect of finally moving on from 200 years of punitive and cruel interventions that stop people accessing the help that they need and punish them for their circumstances. On Monday, 1st of April, Kevin Hollenrake, a business minister, refused to say whether he supported the plans. He told Times Radio, I believe that those things are not within my auspices. I'll be interested to see the legislation as it goes through Parliament and what the Prime Minister has planned. The Times, which first reported the story, said about 40 MPs had made it known to government whips that they would vote against the proposals to criminalise rough sleepers. The former Conservative leader Ian Duncan Smith and Damian Green, the One Nation caucus chair, are among those who have joined the rebellion. Critics say the legislation is so broadly drawn that someone could be considered a nuisance for sleeping in a doorway, being deemed to have an excessive smell, or looking as though they intend to sleep rough. Ministers are in talks with the rebels over a possible compromise before the bill returns to the House of Commons after the Easter recess. Alex Norris, the Shadow Policing Minister, said with soaring serious violence, plummeting charging rates and rock-bottom levels of confidence in policing, the Criminal Justice Bill was a chance to address crucial community safety issues. Instead, the government has chosen to go after homeless people or indeed anyone who smells. These are the twisted priorities of a government out of time. The Liberal Democrat MP, Leila Moran, said the heartless proposals in the Criminal Justice Bill risk bringing back the Vagrancy Act by the back door. The government should listen to their own backbenchers and take a compassionate approach to tackle homelessness instead of stigmatising and criminalising those who sleep rough. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. British ministers are facing a revolt from their own Conservative MPs over plans to criminalise homelessness in the upcoming legislation. Under proposals that form part of the British government's flagship crime bill, police in England and Wales are to be given powers to fine or move on rough sleepers deemed to be causing a nuisance to the public. The move has infuriated many Conservative MPs, about 40 of whom have warned whips that they will vote against the measure. Bob Blackman, the Conservative MP who is coordinating the rebellion, told The Guardian, A lot of colleagues believe that the bill as it stands is completely unacceptable because it would have the effect of criminalising people who have no choice but to sleep on the streets. We are urging ministers to think again. The proposals form part of the Criminal Justice Bill, which is going through the House of Commons and is due to become law before the general election. They were announced by the former Home Secretary Suella Braverman and would give police and local authorities powers to act against nuisance rough sleepers in England and Wales. Rough sleepers could be moved on, they could be fined up to £2,500 or even imprisoned. Senior Conservative MPs on the left and right of the party, including the former Conservative leader Ian Duncan-Smith and the One Nation Caucus chair Damien Green, have signed amendments to the legislation to remove the plans to criminalise rough sleeping. Critics say the legislation is so broadly drawn that someone could be considered a nuisance for sleeping in a doorway, being deemed to have an excessive smell, or looking as though they intend to sleep rough. Kevin Holland-Rake, a business minister, insisted the proposals were only one part of a wider government strategy to get people off the streets. Kevin Holland-Rake claimed, "That's just part of the things that we're looking to do in terms of making sure that people don't sleep on the streets, and that's not right. We want to provide the resources for people, the housing, improving the number of refuges that people can sleep in, and the amount of social housing and affordable housing, which we've done." The broad nature of the Criminal Justice Bill has led MPs to use the legislation as an opportunity to attach other proposals, including banning conversion practices and decriminalising abortion in England and Wales.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I'm Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sayyid Zain. Sayyid Zain, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
For today's episode of the program Viewpoints, we want to talk about the negative effects of the cyberspace, also known as the virtual world, on the family and the foundation of the family, relation between family members. Before getting to the effects, I mean, whether they are positive or negative, mostly I believe negative, let's be a little bit concerned with the definition of cyberspace itself. What is it exactly?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As you rightly termed it as virtual world, you know, though it is termed as virtual world, but in reality nowadays it is the real world. I mean the people are busy with this cyberspace more than being in non-cyberspace kind of world, you know. Yes. So that is why even nowadays we cannot term it as virtual, but we can term it as a kind of real or real external kind of world that we are in. Anyhow, so of course our brothers and sisters already know what is the cyberspace. Sometimes something is that simple that even cannot be defined.
Okay.
And philosophy says that wujud or existence is something that is very much evident to the extent that no one can define it.
Uh-huh.
Nowadays, I think this cyberspace is also like that. But anyhow, of course, being in virtual world via, let's say, internet mostly, or media, for example.
Social networks.
Yeah, being busy with these sort of things, it means that you are much more, let's say, in contact with this kind of virtual world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is what we mean by cyberspace.
That's all right. And most of these video clips, audio ones, the podcast, video cast, the footage, you know, and the content is basically which are fed into the cyberspace or virtual world are taken from the real lives of the people. So can we call it a kind of virtual world, Sayyid?
So it is virtual in the sense that, when we go there, we're not ourselves.
Uh-huh.
But it cannot be disconnected from the real world. Yes. Nothing can be disconnected from it. So there's aspects of that, different things, videos and things that are put there, put from the real world. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't give you a complete, very good idea of the real world. Right, that if somebody was to look at the virtual world, that they won't be able to get a good idea of what real world is like, and that plays a very important role in families, especially,
yes.
And in the well being of a person as well. That if somebody is very much into the virtual world, they start thinking that because when we post things online, usually it's the positive things that we post. People they seldom post that something bad happened to them. And when somebody goes online and looks at other people's and their lives based on social media, Facebook, uh-huh. these kind of things, they see only positives. And they think to themselves that, how come I'm the only one who has negative things in my life?
Yes.
How come, I'm the only kind of person who is in this state that, and everyone else seems to be happy. They're smiling always. They're always, with their spouses, everything is happy. They're going on, this vacation, that thing. And I am, not able to even afford anything. Mm-hmm. I don't have a good, that good of a relation with my family members. And so this brings discontentment
okay.
with, our own family, with our own lives.
Yes.
And we look at ourselves and we're just not happy in the state that we're mm-hmm. in.
That's right. Right.
And that has a negative effect on our own selves, okay. our health, and our family relations
yes.
as well.
Okay, that's right. But Sheikh Rouhani, does it have only negative effects on the lives of the people? I mean, there is no positive effects of the social media or, for example, the cyberspace on the lives of the people. At least, for example, in one of the examples, it was the Israeli attacks on Gaza, I think it made lots of enlightenment among the people in the world. I mean, the footage of the poorness of the people, the hunger and thirst over there, awakening the fitrah of so many of the people who were not even Muslims all across the world. Can you name it as a positive effect of cyberspace or the virtual world or not?
It depends, I think. Historically talking, for example, when we had industrial revolution in the history of particularly Europe, when the European countries became so powerful in terms of warfare, so then we had two world wars, the first and the second. Millions of people were the victims of these industrial development in the West. Always these kind of revolutions in the history, they had their own victims. Generations were the victims of these kind of developments.
Okay.
That is why this cyberspace, it would have, of course, their victims
mm-hmm.
in the history. But then later, as the superpowers finally, they came to this conclusion that they should have a kind of agreement not to continue this killing, massacring each other. Finally, they come to this kind of intellectuality.
Yes.
It seems that finally this cyberspace, of course, it would take its victims, unfortunately, from many generations. As we see nowadays, most of the youth, most of the youngsters, unfortunately, they waste their life, their time. And of course, there are companies, great factories that they just collect the money
okay.
from this wastage of the time and the life of the people.
Mm-hmm.
This is the reality. This victims will be there. But I think step by step, maybe in decades later, for example, or maybe a century later, I'm not sure,
yes.
then the people would understand that they should strengthen their knowledge, their understanding, their perception of how to utilize it, how to use it, how to make
yes.
use. Of course, it has positives, but unfortunately, majority of the youth,
mm-hmm.
the youngsters nowadays, do not make use of these positive aspects of
okay.
cyberspace.
Yes.
Though it has. I hope that the maybe parents, educational systems, I don't know, governments or let's say people, scholars, ulama. Any institutes or, let's say, organizations or people themselves, parents, they should help the youth, the young generations, help them not to waste this much their time, their lives, and just being busy with what we can say with very useless sort of things,
Yes.
Data, information that,
yeah.
that they receive
mm-hmm.
has nothing to do with their lives. There's no okay. any kind of improvement, any perfection, any benefit for them, but unfortunately they just entertain them for hours and nothing they gain. So, of course, finally, at the end of the day, we should come to this perception, to this understanding. Yes. That, of course, we have to, again, this concept of fasting that we are discussing, there should be a kind of fasting, you know, we should fast sometimes, not to be that much busy with this cyberspace, because psychologically it has lots of kind of bad kind of harms, psychologically talking. Economically, we waste our budget just, you know, spending the for these kind of things.
Of course, lots of people are making money out of it, Sheikh.
No, but majority of the people just waste their money, you know. Yeah. And of course, time, life, which is the golden ni'mah, golden opportunity that if you use every moment of your life, you improve a lot, you know. Because as one of the great Ayatollah, Allama Tehrani, rahmatullahi alayhi, was always saying this, uttering this nice, beautiful saying that, let me first say the Persian term, says that, abadiyat dar pish daram, abadiyat dar pish daram. He was always reminding himself of the eternal life, that I'm going to enter to that eternal life. What am I going to achieve in that eternal life? Because every moment that I have in this world, it is the only chance, the only opportunity that I can achieve that eternal, either rewards or punishment.
Yes.
So that's why when we waste all the moments, all the hours of day by these useless sort of things, then what will happen to that eternal life? What we will gain in the hereafter life? No one nowadays cares, unfortunately, being busy with this cyberspace. This Allama Tehrani, rahmatullah alayhi, always reminding himself of that eternity. The eternity, I am at eternity is ahead of me, you know. I'm just heading towards eternity.
And nowadays, unfortunately, kind of virtual eternity is always.
Yeah. And nowadays, unfortunately, no one even can remind himself for one short moment, for a second, that, oh man, you have this eternity. You know?
Yes.
What are you doing? Eternity means that either you will achieve eternal punishment. Eternal punishment, endless, infinite, you know, and or you will gain or achieve eternal rewards.
Yes.
So look how much important is every second of your life. That now you're wasting here and there, watching this movie, this clip, that. I don't know what will happen to the end of our life. Yes.
Okay. That's why nowadays so many people are exposed to such problems, and the damages to the families and the family foundation, said Zain, is another negative effect or impact of the cyberspace, especially in the Muslim lands, you know, that the foundation of family is so much important, you know. Nowadays, unfortunately, we can see the negative effects of social media and the cyberspace. We shall wall on that. What do you think about it?
So as Sheikh said, basically, that there are some positives to it. And for example, this, you know, radio show itself, it's a positive aspect of, you know, the virtual world, that so many people who wouldn't be able to access scholars, for example, and teachings of Islam from where they are, they're able to do it. But we cannot let this control us. Rather, it should be used as a tool, that we control it. We manage it. Otherwise, as you know, Sheikh also mentioned, there are these, you know, companies who are looking for profit, and they're using us for their profit. And they have designed these, you know, platforms to be able to get us addicted to it. Right? It's them and their research of, you know, years and years and experience versus us, who are just, you know, exposed to these social media platforms, and we're just kind of thinking like they're benign and there's nothing wrong with them. Yeah. And we, you know, end up, as Sheikh said as well, wasting our lives away. Now, this has very, you know, negative effects on the family, because the family, for it to be a healthy unit, for the family members to be together, their hearts to be together, understanding to be there, it requires that the family members are able to spend time with each other. They're able to, you know, give each other undivided attention. That, you know, the spouse, you know, the husband has to give undivided attention to the wife. The wife has to give that importance and undivided attention to the husband. Part of that, not all the time, right?
Okay.
It can be managed that, okay, you know, part of the time is spent on these, you know, platforms, and we do important things that we need to do, right? We manage our time. Some part of the day, some time also must be spent with one another. With, you know, the spouses with one another.
This is what most of the families are missing nowadays, you know, being together, or for example going out, or for example I don't know, even traveling to distant places.
Right. Yeah.
Even the people travel on the social media.
Yeah, they can go and see everything on social media. So one aspect of the family that's greatly affected would be the marriage. That spouses, yes, they won't be able to build that strong connection between themselves. But I believe that the most kind of damage that is done in the family would be to the kids, to the children.
Yes.
Because they require, first and foremost, that the parents are close together. There's love between the parents, which if, social media is not managed properly, that becomes difficult to maintain. And secondly, they require attention from their parents. They require tarbiyah from their parents. They require training from their parents, especially for those parents who want their children to be raised Islamically, especially in these non-Islamic environments.
Yes.
Now, parents in these environments have to pay extra attention to the kids. They need to be there for the kids, that, that attention that they, shouldn't get from, because they want to keep their kids away from the negative influences. Now they have to make up for that. Mm-hmm. They have to be there in their lives. They have to play with them, at a younger age, talk to them at an older age, mm-hmm, be friends with them, be there for them, which if they are constantly on their phones, constantly on their, laptops and social media, that becomes difficult.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sayyid Zain and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the negative effects of the cyberspace or virtual world on the lives of the people. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information on this program and other programs, visit our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all and fi amanallah.
You came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to us you've always been so close. Everyone will say, please save me, accept Al-Habib. Ummati, Ummati, yakuluha lana yawma al-qiyamati. Ummati, Ummati, yakuluha shafa'atan ana laha, ana laha.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish. We'll be right back.
in the limelight.
There were no calls by Western leaders for restraint as Israel bombed Gaza into ruins week after week, striking its hospitals, leveling its government offices, blowing up its universities, mosques and churches, and destroying its bakeries. Rather, President Biden has repeatedly rushed through emergency arms sales, bypassing Congress to make sure Israel has enough bombs to keep destroying Gaza and killing its children. Dear listeners, in this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Middle East, I wrote, there is a reason why the Zionist regime has been so ostentatious in its savaging of Gaza and its people. And it is the very same reason Israel felt emboldened to violate the diplomatic sanctity of Iran's consulate in Damascus. Because for decades, the child-killing regime of Israel has been guaranteed protection and assistance from the West, whatever crimes it commits. Israel's founders ethnically cleansed much of Palestine in 1948, far beyond the terms of partition set out by the UN a year earlier. It imposed a military occupation on the remnants of historic Palestine in 1967, driving out yet more of the native population. It then imposed a regime of apartheid on the few areas where Palestinians remained. In the West Bank reservations, Palestinians have been systematically brutalized, their homes demolished, and illegal Jewish settlements built on their land. The Palestinians' holy places have been gradually surrounded and taken from them. Separately, Gaza has been sealed off for 17 years, and its population denied freedom of movement, employment, and the basics of life. Israel's reign of terror to maintain its absolute control has meant imprisonment and torture are a rite of passage for most Palestinian men. Any protest is ruthlessly crushed. Now, Israel has added mass slaughter in Gaza, genocide, to its long list of crimes. The Zionist regime's displacements of Palestinians to neighboring states caused by its ethnic cleansing operations and slaughter have destabilized the wider region. And to secure its militarized settler colonial project in the West Asia region and its place as Washington's top dog client regime in the region, Israel has intimidated, bombed, and invaded its neighbors on a regular basis. Its attack on Iran's consulate in Damascus was just the latest of serial humiliations faced by Arab regimes. And through all of this, Washington and its vassal states have directed no more than occasional lip service calls for restraint towards Israel. There were never any consequences, but instead rewards from the West in the form of endless billions in aid and special trading status. So why, after decades of debauched violence from the Zionist regime, has the West suddenly become so interested in restraint? Because on this rare occasion it serves Western interests to calm the fires Israel is so determined to stoke. The Israeli regime strike on Iran's consulate came just as the Biden administration was finally running out of excuses for providing the weapons and diplomatic cover that has allowed the Zionist regime to slaughter, maim, and orphan tens of thousands of Palestinian children in Gaza over 6 months. Demands for a ceasefire and arms embargo on the Zionist regime have been reaching fever pitch, with Biden hemorrhaging support among parts of his democratic base as he faces a rerun presidential election later this year against a resurgent rival, Donald Trump. Small numbers of votes could be the difference between victory and defeat. The Zionist regime had every reason to fear that its patron might soon pull the rug from under its campaign of mass slaughter in Gaza. But having destroyed the entire infrastructure needed to support life in the enclave, the Zionist regime needs time for the consequences to play out, either mass starvation there or a relocation of the population elsewhere on supposedly humanitarian grounds. A wider war centered on Iran would both distract from Gaza's desperate plight and force Biden to back Israel unconditionally to make good on his ironclad commitment to Israel's protection. And to top of it all, with the U.S. drawn directly into a war against Iran, Washington would have little choice but to assist the child-killing regime of Israel in its long campaign to destroy Iran's nuclear energy program, which is totally peaceful. That is why Biden officials are airing concerns to the U.S. media that Israel is ready to do something rash in an attempt to drag the administration into a wider war. The truth is, however, that Washington long ago cultivated Israel as its military Frankenstein monster. The Zionist regime's role was precisely to project U.S. power ruthlessly into the oil-rich West Asia region. The price Washington was more than willing to accept was Israel's eradication of the Palestinian people, replaced by a fortress Jewish state. Calling for the child-killing regime of Israel to exercise restraint now, as its entrenched lobbies flex their muscles meddling in Western politics, and self-confessed fascist rule Israel's government, is beyond parody. If the West really prized restraint, they should have insisted on it from the fabricated regime of Israel decades ago.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Yvonne says Israel system.